The meeting of the Amador Air District Board of Directors together. Hello? We have a quorum, I assume. Yes? Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance.
Public for which it stands. Visible with liberty.
Everybody look at the agenda.
Move to approve the agenda.
Second.
Okay. All in favor of approving the agenda, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you. All right. Public matters not on the agenda. Discussion items only. No action to be taken. Any person may address the board at this time upon any subject within the jurisdiction of Amador Air District Board of Directors. However, any matter that requires action may be referred to staff or a committee for a report and recommendation for possible action at a subsequent board meeting. Please note there's a 5-minute limit per topic. Anybody? All right, administrative matters. Review and approval of the minutes of the April 18th board meeting.
I make a general comment on the minutes. I guess we've gone away from summary minutes. These have to take a long time to put together. And I would be an advocate of going with summary minutes because I'll tell you, when I reviewed the minutes, I did a summary review of the minutes because it's so long that I'm not going to go point by point through. I'm going to just try and see if motions and things like that. And I would be an advocate for summary minutes.
Can I offer a different perspective? I missed the last meeting, and the only way I was able to really understand what occurred was by reading the minutes, and they're so clear and comprehensive that I felt like I was there in the chair after all.
Are the minutes on tape?
And for somebody in the public who may want to understand what had happened, I think this form of minutes would be very beneficial. Just another perspective.
Are the minutes on tape?
The meetings are recorded, yes.
Yeah,
so,
right.
So the meetings could be reviewed that way, but it takes staff an inordinate amount of time to put the minutes together like this.
Well, other board members?
Well, they are very detailed, but if you would like to shorter or more brief, that's fine with me. However, all the detail is benefit to not getting other things done. You need the time.
It's not up to him. It's up to us.
Right. It is up to us.
I think, if you're spending, like, hours doing this, you're spending an hour, hour and a half, that's fine.
I have to admit, I'm not doing them.
I was going to say, so is the question to Virginia.
But it does take a significant amount of her time and effort. I think we could look at them with an eye at possibly trying to make them a little more concise, but still maintaining as much detail as possible.
I think that'd probably be good, but also you should probably look at what the item is.
Mm-hmm.
If it's something that's fairly important, if it's just some mundane stuff, probably not really that necessary to have them as long as they are.
Okay. You got your microphone?
Can't hear you. If it's a very important subject that we're discussing that needs to be into very good detail, then I'll go into it. For the most part, if it's conversation going back and forth, I try to minimize that to short answers, but...
Are you saying they're already sort of summarized then?
Yes, you guys talk a lot. A good way, but yes.
I'm used to the summary minutes myself.
Me too.
I would prefer that with the tape backup. I needed it.
And even on our board meetings, if there's an item that you want to get more of a feel for how the discussion went, you can pick it up on tape and listen to it that way.
Sounds like a consensus on at least taking a look at the minutes and seeing if we can streamline them a bit.
I think so, Jim. I think that's a great idea. Any changes, corrections?
I didn't see anything.
Okay.
Move to approve the minutes.
Second.
Any other comments, questions? Okay. All in favor of approving the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Fetcher and Company Air District 215-16 audit presentation.
Yes, and Jim McCargue, Air Pollution Control Officer. This last year, we had the, I guess it would be referred to as a biennial audit for 2015-2016, and Fechter and Company is the outside independent audit that we have used in the past, and we used again this time. And the audit information has been provided for you, including the financial statements and the management report. And we have Sandy Supp from Fechter & Company here today to provide a bit of a presentation on the audit. So I'll call Sandy up, please.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm an audit manager with Fechter & Company, and I've been there for about 2 years. And prior to that, I worked for Galena, who we used to audit this county. And I was actually the audit manager for the Amador County audit at Galena. But anyway, I'm just going to...
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so I assume everyone's had a chance to at least glance at the financial statements. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to point out some highlights, and then I'll open it up for any questions that you may have. Okay, so the first page one is probably the most important part of the audit. That's our opinion letter, and as you can see, that you have a clean opinion. The Air District has a clean opinion on these financial statements. So that's probably the most important thing. And let's see. Other than that. Okay, so that's our opinion. Let's go on to the government-wide financial statements, which are on pages 3, 4, and 5. Okay, on pages 3 and 4, or actually, let's just look at page 3. It's a statement of net position, essentially the government-wide term for balance sheet, and it just presents the 2 years side by side. And so, of course, the largest items are cash and investment, and then, of course, what showed up a couple years ago is the net pension liability, and that's due to GASB 68, which was passed a few years ago, and so now the net pension liability has to be reported. So that kind of changed the whole balance sheet quite a bit for everyone, all governments. Okay, so they're really, from year to year, there really hasn't been much change. So, yeah, there's not a whole lot to talk about there. Okay, and the next page 4 is the statement of activities for the year ended June 30, 2016, and then page 5 is the same report for 2015. And there again, if you
you can look at them side by side and see that actually your expenses actually went down slightly from 15 to 16. And let's see, it looks like your revenues, well, operating contributions and grants went down also, but charges for services went up. So not there again, not a whole lot of change between the two. Okay. And then, so the next few statements are the balance sheet and the statement of revenues, expenditures, and changes in fund balance for the general fund, which is the Amador Air District only has one fund, and it's called the general fund. All districts have to have at least a general fund. Sometimes districts have several funds, but if you only have one fund, it's the general fund. So there, that, you know, these are on the modified accrual basis, which means it doesn't include your long-term debt, like net pension liability is not reflected on these on this balance sheet, on the fund statements. It doesn't include your long-term liabilities or any fixed assets that you have. So it's more closer to the budgetary basis that you're used to seeing with the budget. Okay, so, and then starting on page 10 is there are the notes to the financial statements. So basically it explains the first 10 pages. So the notes just refer to the previous pages. Okay, and yeah, there's not a whole lot to highlight here because of GASB 68 is so complicated, and it's, you know, it's pretty significant. If you look at note 5, public employee retirement system, it's very long, goes on for several pages. And I just want to point out that the Air District, as you all know, is part of Amador County's system, retirement system. So you don't get a separate actuarial report. So what we rely on the county's report to prepare this footnote.
Should that all be note 5 instead of note 6?
Oh yeah, did it change? Oh yeah, you're right. It did. It should all be note 5, right? It's the same note. Yeah. Yeah. So to calculate the district's percent of the Amador County net pension liability, basically we base it on the district's contributions during the year, and that's a percent. I want to say it's around 0.4% of the county's contribution. So basically, if you take 0.4% of Amador County's net pension liability, you will arrive at the Air District's liability. Okay, I think that's about all I have to say about the financial statements. Are there any questions on the financial statements?
Questions?
I have a question regarding the pension liability, looking into the future. You're right, this is pretty complicated. It goes on for page after page.
Mm-hmm.
Can you just summarize what we can expect over the next 3 or 4 years in terms of changes in pension liabilities and how they're going to have the potential to affect our budget. What should we be thinking about as we're looking forward a couple of years?
Well, you know, it's hard to say because they do new estimates every year. It's like a moving target. But I would say that, you know, it's most likely going to increase. I don't see it decreasing. And, you know, it's very complicated. They consider factors of how many people are retiring and how many new hires there are, because the new hires obviously are coming in under a different plan than the people that are retiring. So I don't have a crystal ball, and there probably is literature out there that, you know, you could PERS probably does a projection, but I haven't looked at that, to be honest.
Thank you.
And their projections haven't been that good for a fair while.
No.
That's a good point.
I mean, these are the projections, but I don't know why.
Got to trust PERS.
Yeah, I'm sorry I can't answer that,
okay,
Heather.
You.
But if you go to their website, they may have something on the website that, you know, might offer some guidance.
Other questions?
Are we talking about also the management report too?
Yeah, we can go right to the management report.
Well, I have a question on this before we...
Okay.
Sure. On page 5, there's a large prior period adjustment. Do you know what that was for?
Yes, I believe that is for the implementation of GASB 68.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it's just a new standard, so every government had huge prior period adjustments in 15, so.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay, so what our accounting standards, auditing standards, require that we communicate to the board, and that's basically the purpose of the management report. So, basically, it's a standard template which covers various things. You know, it talks about the significant accounting policies, any significant accounting estimates that we use. And of course, you know, estimates such as, compensated absences, and capital asset lives. And of course, the most significant one is the retirement plan, liability. So, we just need to communicate, those estimates. Also, any audit adjustments that we had to make on page 3. It lists the audit adjustments. It's pretty straightforward. There are no disagreements with management. We had no difficulties doing the audit. It went very smoothly. So, okay, and we also offer recommendations, and we didn't really have any recommendations, you know, and keep in mind that we're reporting on financial statements only. We aren't reporting on any operation type recommendations. Okay. That's not what we're hired to do. So it's, for financial statement preparation, keeping the books, we don't have any recommendations for the current year.
Questions?
No, I just thought you had some recommendations as far as basically internal controls, and it looks like those were all implemented to your satisfaction.
Yes, we recommend it. You know, it's very difficult with a small entity to have segregation of duties, for example, which is, you know, it's that's good internal controls to have segregation of duties. What in a case of a small district such as yours, what we recommend is to have the management oversight. So in the case of, you know, Jim and Herminia, we feel that they, you know, have adequate management supervision, and also the fact that, you know, the county auditor controller, you know, basically keeps the books. That's where your records, you know, everything goes through them. So that's another set of eyes. So, yeah, we feel that you have, you know, for considering you're the size of the district, you're doing well with internal controls.
Indy, I have a question on page 3 of the management report.
Okay.
The top audit adjustments. I'll admit to I'm struggling to understand the message that paragraph is trying to send. Can you explain that in more detail? And the last sentence says the following audit adjustments in our judgment indicate matters that could have a significant effect on the district's financial reporting process.
Okay.
What is that trying to tell us?
Basically, without these adjustments, the financial statements would not be fairly stated. Basically, what these are, and these entries, like, for example, the posting of all GASB 34 entries on behalf of the district, that GASB 34 was implemented in the early 2000s, and it basically went from governments didn't used to have to depreciate capital assets, for example. And also, they didn't, in the general fund or on the government-wide statements, they didn't have to report their long-term debt. So what we're doing is we're posting those entries. Those entries, like, for example, the district books that, you know, the county's books out of, I forget what system they're using now, but they do not include these entries. So we have to post them.
So your firm has done this part of your work?
Yes.
And therefore the financial statements are complete now?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
And I would say that 95% of our district, you know, we generally do small districts, that's our main clientele. And we post these entries for all of them.
Yeah.
And even for the county, when I used to audit this county, we would post these adjustments for the county as well. It's only, I would say, your really large counties that are very sophisticated that they would be posting these entries themselves. Generally, I mean, that's generally speaking. There are exceptions out there, but...
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions?
I have one on page 5 of your management report. You make the recommendation the district has implemented the above recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
So I assume that means the district now has two people, so you don't just have the one set of eyes doing everything.
If you don't have
sure.
I wanted to mention that regarding this, the second paragraph in my memo of your agenda packet talks about the fact that this very same issue came up during the last audit, and in response to that, the Air District staff has conducted meetings with both the county budget officer and the county auditor. And we reviewed the source spreadsheets, and we continue to review those, also with our contract engineer, for the fees that are based upon the source emission calculations. And then in addition, we reviewed the QuickBooks accounting software that we use, and we continue, as per the recommendation, we continue to review this, again, with the county budget officer and with the auditor's office on an annual basis, usually after the start of each fiscal year, as recommended by Fechter Audit. So we did hear them when they said this last time, and as Sandy mentioned, this does tend to come up with a small district like ours, but we have put these controls into place where we have additional management oversight and eyes on it.
So do you have any documentation, people signing off to show that the review took place?
Trying to think. I have some sheets. Nothing formal, I think, is what you're referring to.
I would think with a recommendation like this, it probably should be more of a formal action where you actually have the auditor signing off to show that the review took place for your own protection more than anything.
Sure. No, I see your point. And again, in response to the recommendation from the last time, we initiated and put into effect these meetings. I think you're right. The next step, just to cover all bases, might be to have a letter and a signature on it.
Yeah, because, I mean, there have been cases, not saying in our county, although I could probably find some, where people said they did things and they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Actually having a formal documentation would protect you down the road.
Yeah.
I agree with that, and it could just be sort of a verification of the meeting and the results.
Yeah, some sort of written documentation. I mean, if push came to shove, I could pull emails that, would validate the fact that we have these meetings, so I feel fairly comfortable with that. But to the extent of an additional, letter, that, we could do that.
Going forward.
Not asking for anything real formal, maybe just a simple one paragraph and everybody just put their initials on it.
Good idea. Any questions, comments on audit or management report? Okay, the chair will entertain a motion to approve the Fetcher and Company audit for the period 2015-16.
I'll move. Second.
You get that? The motion and second?
Who's second?
Yep.
Stimson.
All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Welcome. You're welcome.
We always appreciate reports like that. No trouble.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go on to item 3 on the agenda, electric vehicle charging stations.
Yes. And you have a memo in the packet and then an additional sheet of information and a map on the back of that. And so this came from the last meeting when informally the topic of electric vehicle charging stations in the county came up, and staff was directed to bring an agenda item forward to this meeting. Staff has done some research here on the subject, and we've also reached out to a neighboring county. Matt Peterson of my staff has put together a pretty thorough sheet here that takes into consideration some of the permitting issues, some of the cost involving installation and parts, as well as some other considerations down at the bottom. And then, as I said, on the back side of that is a map that shows some of the existing charging stations.
So we've taken a pretty good look at this, and you know, initially we looked at this from the perspective of possibly having three additional charging stations. And again, this was also brought up because we had at least a couple inquiries to the Air District about having additional charging stations, including the Amador Superior Court building and the Health and Human Services building, and then also this building here, the County Administrative Center. So we just kind of looked at it for sake of a starting point, is three installations. And what we came up with is roughly about $20,000 for the cost to do the installation for the three charging stations. And then we also looked at the cost of electricity for usage on these three stations. And it was a little bit tricky because, you know, there's a lot of variables. There's a lot of moving parts. But we kind of distilled it down from looking at it from two different angles, including the El Dorado Air Quality Management District information. But basically, we looked at it about 52 cents per hour of operating costs. The El Dorado one is I think, about 57 cents per hour. So,
hey, Jim?
Yes.
When you're referring to the operating cost, is that the actual electricity that is being used to charge a battery in somebody's car?
Yes.
Do they pay for any of that, or is it a service we provide them, or how does that work?
Well, that would have to be determined. We, in our research, we found that there's both free electric vehicle charging stations in the county currently, and there are ones that are where the customer, the electric vehicle owner, has to pay. Either I don't know if they, I think nowadays they pay with an app on their smartphone. But they also at one time had them where you could slide a credit card or put in a credit card and you could pay. What we found is that when we have seen both the free and the charging ones are virtually unused. The ones that have free electricity get used.
Who are the
shocking?
Who are the main?
How long do you have to study that?
Customers, are they residents or are they visitors?
Both. And as a matter of fact, last time we were here, it was a county employee. The new, I think he's the ag commissioner. He's a user of these, and so there are in county folks, and there's also people that are passing through the county that will use them.
I guess I had a question, is why did we choose the county properties? Is that because we own the property and we can put this up? We don't have to acquire property, or?
I think that's part of it. It also came about based upon the inquiries we received. People have asked, you know, hey, how come there's not a electric vehicle charging station at Amador Superior Court building, or how come there's not one?
Do they actually drive an electric car there? Because I would have thought, like in the Martel Shopping Plaza, for some reason, would be like that's where more people are. I don't know.
Yeah, I did not get that.
Understand.
Yeah, didn't. I think at one time we years ago we got an inquiry from someone looking for a charging station at the Save Mart supermarket, what is that, Amador Ridge Shopping Center, but they wanted specifically a Tesla charging station, and those are very expensive, prohibitively expensive.
Do we have charging stations like in Plymouth and upcountry? Or?
Yeah, and the map shows you where the charging stations are.
All charging stations.
Yeah.
I needed stronger glasses because I couldn't read the...
Yeah, that is kind of that map we could.
I can see where all the little green things are, so we do have pretty good coverage.
Plymouth, and then it looks like in the maybe the wineries have a number of them.
I don't think their coverage is as complete as you think, there, Frank.
Is that right? Well, the
green ones are private. I'm sorry, the blue ones are. I can't read this.
Yeah, the blue ones are private. Right?
Oh, okay. And there, I guess there's nothing like up in Pine Grove or higher.
No, there's not.
A whole lot of people up there.
They take much maintenance at all? Probably not.
Maintenance has not, seemed to be much of an issue. I don't know.
Brian touched on a question I had. Who actually owns the equipment, and who's liable if something goes haywire, if it shocks somebody and somebody gets sued? Who owns the equipment, and who has the liability?
Liability. I don't know if that came up in any of your conversations, but no, we that didn't come up. But I would imagine that the Air District is going, if the Air District were to purchase them, then the Air District, I believe, would be liable, unless there's some sort of written agreement where ownership is transferred to, like, say, in the case of the Amador Superior Court, if there was some sort of agreement in place where ownership and liability, therefore, was transferred over.
Other questions?
Wherever they're located, who takes responsibility for paying for the power? Is it the entity like the county, if the county were to take over responsibility for it?
It seems like, for example, the transit center has charging stations there, and the transit center pays for the cost of the electricity at those locations. There's a charging station, I think, down here below Jackson City Hall, and then there's also one right across the street in the parking lot, and the city pays for that. So the way they seem to work is the entity that has the charging stations pays the cost of electricity, which is why I included a cost of electricity on here. And I did do some calculations. I think that's probably worst case scenario. I don't think the actual cost would go this high, but I wanted to at least, make sure we were looking at it from worst case scenario.
I've got to be missing something, Jim. What's the theory behind subsidized power to power private electric vehicles? I know I'm missing something. Why would the Air District or the county or anybody else pay for to power my vehicle? I don't get it. I honestly don't know.
I got the answer. You're the just theory? Not very socially conscious.
No, I think it does come down to the, the reduction in emissions generated from vehicles, and providing folks with an opportunity to charge their vehicles.
Feel good and make Elon Musk more rich.
So, is it possible we could start out with charging people to use these three stations?
I think so, yeah. We can set this up however we want to. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
That has to increase the cost of the individual station, I would think. The card reader or the software, the security around the communications that's required to collect money has to drive the cost of the stations up, I would think.
Yeah, there is. We have looked at the additional cost for being able to pay on the spot, and I'm not seeing it right in front of me, but there is going to be some additional cost associated with that. Again, I think pretty much nowadays it's all app-based on your smartphone.
Whatever increased cost there is would be recuperated by what we charge, though, wouldn't it?
Yes.
The additional cost would be... I guess it would depend on what the cost was to the customers. So
you know, the cost could be just simply the 52 cents per hour, which is the cost of the power, or the cost could be slightly more to then recapture some of the upfront costs.
I think it's a philosophical question. These things are a lot less expensive to install than I ever expected. I'm surprised they're this cheap. If you add 20% for a card reader or communications or a software to read I don't know how it works.
Yeah.
But if it adds 20% to the cost, to the minimal cost of an installation, but the user ends up paying for power, I mean, philosophically, that makes more sense to me anyway.
Mm-hmm.
The Air District is promoting the use of electric vehicles to reduce emissions, but we're not subsidizing private parties so they can drive around for free. And that makes my gears turn.
Right. And again, based upon, you know, what we've observed right here in the county, I might be a little concerned that if we put one out and required the customer to pay for the cost, there may be no use of it. It could be that we install this thing, and I mean, we've seen these ones that literally have cobwebs all over them because they simply do not get touched, because people will go to the one where they're getting the free charge. So I'm not saying that's a reason for us to pay for the power, but I just want you to be aware that it may not be the best investment if we were to put in a station and not have it utilized.
That says to me that the station is not really needed.
Yeah. How many electric vehicles are there in the county? Do we have any feel for that?
I almost guess by the map to a certain degree, because it shows private stations.
Yeah, those must be folks that own electric vehicles, right? And they have a station in a garage.
The blue ones?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
blue ones.
The private ones.
How long does somebody hook up to this? All day or an hour?
I think typically it's about 4 hours, isn't it, Matt? About 4 hours is a full charge on one of these, which is, I believe these are considered, are they phase two or second generation? It used to be that it took all day to charge. These take about 4 hours, and then again, the high-speed Tesla-type chargers, I think, can do it in 20 minutes.
Then what do other counties, what are they doing? Are they giving away free power at this point? Or
El Dorado County is.
About Lake Calaveras or anything?
What's that? I didn't check with Calaveras yet. Yeah.
Are there? You know if the power consumption is being covered by grants from other agencies? Is that the justification for providing free power? Or is it just the generosity of the El Dorado County Board of Supervisors?
I think
I've dealt with them, and I'll bet that's not it.
The El Dorado County Air Quality Management District, I think, has a policy or a position where they want to encourage these stations, and so they're willing to pay for the cost of the power because it's one of their projects that they're really encouraging.
I find it incredible that somebody who would spend the money on an electric car wouldn't want to pay $2 for 4 hours of charging.
I learned my lesson that one years ago. I was selling some Oakwood as a young man. So I put two ads. One was Oakwood, so $2.50 a cord, and one was oak trees that are cut from naturally dead. No green trees were alive, and I put $100 extra on that cord, and I didn't sell one.
And to your point, I think we had heard from talking to El Dorado County is some of the folks that are most mad about having to pay when they do have to pay is the Tesla owners. Now, they pay over $100,000 for their vehicles, but they get really mad when they've got to pay 52 cents. I'm not joking. That's true.
Does our state allow charging?
Does the state?
Put in a station, can you charge in California?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I'm looking online, and they say in the areas that allow charging. So in this state, I would have thought they would have already prohibited it. But it does kind of take away the incentive on driving an electric car if you're going to have to. I think people buy it with the thought that I'm doing good things out there. I shouldn't have to pay for it.
Really? You got to be kidding.
No, I think philosophically.
I think people buy an electric vehicle believing that they're going to drive it for the lifespan of that vehicle.
Well, they're not paying any road tax right now.
Power.
They're not paying any road tax.
Well, it's much cheaper still to operate an electric vehicle, even if they paid for the electricity. It's much cheaper than a gas.
I think they're being sold as race cars. They all want to be in the fast lane.
Okay,
ever notice that?
You know, I'd like to look and see what other counties are doing. You know, for long term, I don't think we can give away free electricity, especially when the gas tax is going up and they're not paying that. It just seems like they're using roads and everything else. It just doesn't quite seem to fit right. And I think eventually we have to probably consider charging.
I use the post office test, right? Somebody bangs me on the head at the post office and says, you voted to install electric vehicle charging stations, but not to charge people for power? Why?
Mm-hmm.
If I don't have a good answer,
mm-hmm.
You know, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't mind for a short term, you know, get them used to it, encourage it, but long term, I don't know if we can do that.
Okay, board, we need to give some direction to Jim. Oh, I'm sorry.
Pat.
You could probably get some pretty good data by now of what the city's charging station down below is, and because that's probably used more by the tourists, people staying at the hotel, what kind of return they've made, and
right. I think we did inquire, but the electric vehicle costs weren't necessarily segregated out as part of an overall power charge. So I think we were having a hard time, wasn't that right, with the city?
I did give you the... We only have about 15 months, I think, on that spread. So, not a lot of information, so we can probably get it.
But one thing that I was going to mention is, you know, I was thinking this through, and say, for example, we wanted to put a station at the Amador Superior Court building. Well, to hook this up, to do it, there would have to be a connection made to their meter, their power panel. And so really the cost for charging would have to be, it would come up to be a decision of the Superior Court because they're their own entity. So if, you know, in other words, if they were agreeable to and wanted a charging station, I really don't think there's any way that we would pay because it's their power that's being utilized. So I think part of the agreement, or at least my recommendation would be, is, for example, Superior Court, you guys want one, are you willing to either charge the customer or pay for it? Good, here you go. So I think that's something to consider. We would, in other words, we wouldn't install a separate meter, Air District meter, just for this charging station so that we could then pay that. It would have to be absorbed by the entity.
Now you're talking.
Yeah.
Right.
I have one other comment, and I'm sorry, Lynn. And that would be that the locations, if we pursued this and we looked at the locations that you spoke of, one here, Health and Human Services Building, Superior Court, there are some in Jackson, or one in Jackson, I don't know how many. That seems like quite a concentration of public stations in one area. And I'd sure like to see them spread out a little bit. There's a big concentration of population up country, but there's nothing east of 49 that... And that may not be quite true. Where would that one be?
And one question I have along that line is, what's the purpose of putting it in? I mean, so a employee has a place to charge your vehicle? Is it something you want to have tourists come in and charge your vehicles? If it's for tourism, it should probably be more like in town somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I guess, along the 88 corridor and the 16 corridor. Charging stations.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I asked the question, who's the number one users, residents or visitors?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, without knowing specifically, I would say it's a mix. Yeah.
I didn't realize there were that many residents that had.
Okay, I think we've probably beat this long enough. We need to give some direction to the staff. What would you like to do?
I'd kind of like some more information on the other
right.
public stations as to do
what
any of them
do.
Charge. I get the feeling, I think that ACTC or AT is no charge, but I'd kind of like to get some more information on the public stations as to do any of them charge, and if they do charge, how much do they charge? It looks like some of them are on the, I can see that small, but it looks like they're probably at wineries where they're located. Well, do they charge, or is it just an incentive to get people there to have a charging station?
Yeah, my experience has been that, the one up at Transit Center, there is no charge to the electric vehicle driver, and the City of Jackson covers the cost of electricity for their locations as well. We haven't spoken to the wineries, but I would think the wineries also pay for the cost of the power. You're right, as an encouragement for people to come in. Because you got to remember, if people are coming in and spending 4 hours charging their vehicles, they're looking for a place to go have lunch, a place to go do some shopping, a place to spend some time. So there's that, you know, as Director Onetto was saying, the tourist aspect of it. Economic development side of things.
Yeah, that's what I'm just looking at, you know, the places, whether we do it or not, something to talk about probably at a future point even more so.
Mm-hmm.
But like you got the all the county buildings,
mm-hmm.
and how many tourists are really going to go there and park for X hours to charge your car?
Mm-hmm.
I know if I was a tourist, I wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Now if you said, hey, I can go park Sutter Creek, Jackson, Pine Grove, somewhere where I can go eat or go shop or do something, I
mm-hmm.
might consider it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess generally speaking, I'd like to see some better information on how best to site these rather than just responding to a request from a governmental agency, I want one.
Mm-hmm.
Be interested to know where they should be located to be best utilized by the most people.
Okay.
That's it. Otherwise, we're going to get an electric charger for, let's say, Jim McCargue, so he can go park out here and charge his car.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you got a free gas station for me?
Yeah.
But
well,
is it realistic in some locations to site? In the general services building area complex, there's not a lot of parking there right now, and as I read this, it'd be more akin to a ADA type of spot to locate it. It would take that kind of room.
Yeah, and that's the other part of this is the actual logistical requirements and, you know, who the property owner is and what would be allowable to comply with the ADA requirements. Those are some considerations. And so, my recommendation, I kind of expected that we would back this around a bit and then want to bring it back with more information. But even though we put in three for the sake of a starting point, I think if we got to the point, I would recommend one as a pilot project if and when this board of directors decided that was the direction to go. One, to see how it went, and then if there was a need to build upon it. But that was going to be my recommendation.
Then the other thing would be to talk to John Gadney and our AT director, Brian Maggie, about this and see if there's any dollars from the transit side that could help fund something like this.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, we can. I think we got a good idea on some of the questions that have come up and what to look at and maybe have another discussion next time.
That sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you. You have direction. And I like pilot projects in general, so I like your idea of doing a pilot project with just one.
Sure. Sure.
Okay. Thank you. Let's move on to item 4, burn permit fee.
Okay, and burn permit fee, and again, at the last meeting, staff was directed to bring an agenda item to this meeting discussing potentially reducing burn permit fees. In my memo, I have information here that I put together for you regarding our burn permit fees, currently $30 for 1 year, $60 for 2 year. The biggest cost associated right now, as you all know, is the smoke reduction bin program, pine needle bins. We're currently at a $70,000 per year budget. Annual staff costs are estimated between $30,000 and $40,000, and I estimated those. I broke out how I got to the estimate based on a percentage of one staff member's time and the number of hours and the charge out rate, again coming up with between $33,000 and $40,000. So total costs for the burn season is estimated between $100,000 and $110,000. Revenue from burn permit sales is about $20,000. So it's clear that, you know, revenues do not match the costs associated, but we are covering the costs with other revenue that comes into the district. And obviously, if our revenues were to change or decrease, then we'd have to really reconsider kind of our costs associated with the burn season. I've put down three recommended options. One is to leave the fees unchanged. Two is to reduce the 2 year burn permit fee from $60 to $50. Three is reduce the 1 year burn fee from $30 to $25, and 2 year from $60 to $50. What you don't have on there is the estimated reduction in revenue that number two and three would result in. And what I found is number two would reduce the revenue, the annual revenue, that $20,000 by $2,000 to $3,000, and number three would reduce that annual $20,000 to bring it down $4,000 to $5,000. And with that, I'll entertain any questions.
Could you remind me, Jim, why we decided to do this?
I was going to ask that exact question.
Because I asked.
Oh, okay. Because
was
it you that asked? Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
What would be the purpose for reducing it?
Hey, it would be nice to see a taxpayer get something at a reduced cost for change. I mean, government taxes go up, costs go up, or fees go up, fees go up, fees go up. More programs come along that cost more. More gas taxes get paid that cost more. I'm just trying to see if there's some way we could charge less for change.
I agree with you. I would take recommendation number three, except for I would make it $30 for the first year, but give them an incentive for going 2 years and take it down to $50.
I think actually if it costs that much in staff time, if you sold more two-year permits rather than one-year permits, you might actually make some money. Maybe not make money, but have more staff time available.
Well, if you sold more two-year, then you're going to sell less one-year. So there's an offset.
Yeah. So so it takes, if you sell 2 one-year permits, what's it take, 10 minutes per permit or 5 minutes per permit?
Sure, 5 minutes. Let's say 5 minutes.
Okay,
yeah.
So 2 permits take 10 minutes. And it takes 10 minutes of staff time. If you sell 1 two-year permit, takes 5 minutes. So it's basically your staff time is on those permits that you'd sell would be reduced about 50%.
I don't know. Your costs are not nearly being covered. So I don't know why we would want to reduce fees.
Do we know what neighboring counties, Calaveras, El Dorado, charge for burn permits? I'm trying to put our fees in perspective.
And it varies. I'm trying to remember offhand. I don't know. Matt, do you remember?
It matters how you define your permit per year.
I'm sorry, say?
Well, come on.
They're
Matt, with your district, these are agricultural burning permits.
large pile. So every district does it different. One district might allow you to get a permit for $5, but you have to burn a minimum of 5 acres. So it's what you guys have set up.
I'm just trying to put it in perspective.
Other than that, they all use the 4 foot by 4 foot or under through CAL FIRE.
So I think it's probably hard to get an apples to apples comparison, but from my memory, I think I recall some of them have fees similar to ours. Others have no fees whatsoever. They don't charge a burn permit fee. Some of them charge less. So it tends to vary quite a bit, Robin.
You know, there's the with garbage tipping fees at landfills, there's a breaking point above which, if your fees get to a certain point, people throw their trash on the side of the road and they don't pay the fee. There's that tipping point beyond which people won't pay. They'll get rid of their garbage one way or the other, but they won't necessarily pay to get rid of it if the fees are exorbitant. So there is a balance to be struck here. And I'm not sure, I don't know if 30 or 25 is the right number. I mean, the difference between it is pretty small, but
sure, I wouldn't mind maybe.
You have to be careful of that.
We made it to where, made a two-year permit, maybe 50, and just leave a single year, maybe 30. So that way there, it's...
That's option two.
Yeah. I could probably live with that.
Motion?
I'll make that a motion.
Okay. I have a motion and a second to leave the one-year fee at 30 and lower the two-year fee from 60 to 50. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
I'm going to oppose. We have a $100,000 cost in a program that we earned $20,000 for. I don't think we have any business lowering it.
That's because of all those pine needle dumpsters.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Okay.
Well, there is, you know, the reason for the program is to keep our air quality down. It's not necessarily supposed to pay for itself. You know, there is something there's the benefit you're reaping.
Yeah, the dumpster program certainly doesn't pay for itself.
I don't know. We just started that.
Trying to incentivize people to get permits, though, and to be legal.
Exactly. So.
Right.
All the wood cutting is
going
to happen.
How's it been going this year? As far as I know, you have in the past spent a lot of your own time going out and knocking on people's doors that have untended fires.
We actually have noticed a reduction in smoke complaints.
Oh, good.
Good. Yeah, with the way we've been managing the BIN program. So there has been, I think, a pretty good response to it.
Okay, let's go.
I must say I do have a complaint. It's burn permit related or non-burn permit related. Whoever manages that, mitigation lands over off the bypass, they did, I think, an unpermitted burn, and they burn up plastic pipe, they burn up plastic fencing, they burn up treated poles around oak trees, and they burn up a whole bunch of oak trees, and the cost was like $5 million to buy the property and oak trees, so I'm upset.
When was that burned?
I'll take that complaint back to the powers that be.
They had a wildfire. We burned through that mitigation. Burn up the plastic piping and burn up
the
plastic fencing.
Burn up all our dead trees.
And the plastic fencing.
All the dead trees.
Now, the other thing, I was just back in Atlanta, and they use pine needles as we would use bark or something. They use pine needles as the where you would normally put the bark.
A mulch, yeah.
As a mulch or something, yeah. They use the pine needles, and it looked pretty good.
Yeah.
That's the way the back acre at my property is, because I'm not about to go down and rake up those pine needles. So, okay. Item 5, public hearing for fiscal year 17-18 district budget.
Okay. And you have a memo and the attached budget sheets with that. And
So this was discussed at the last meeting in April, and then today has been noticed properly as the public hearing. There was one change from the budget you looked at in April to what you have in front of you today, and that is the special projects expense line has been changed from $85,000 to $119,000, and correspondingly, the draw from reserves will change from $85,000 to $119,000. And the reason for this $34,000 increase is to close out the city-county agency diesel program that was approved in the 16-17 budget at $169,000. Staff expended approximately $100,000 on the program, and that leaves $69,000 remaining to be expended in this coming fiscal year. However, I had only had $35,000 on the line that we looked at in April, so I had to change that $35,000 to $69,000, and then again, the two projects total $119,000. So that's the main change that you see. It really doesn't affect much of anything because it is our draw from reserve. And one thing I'll notice on the overview as of June 20th, and it should say 2017, not 2016. There was a typo there, but our reserves stand at $518,230. Our operating cash, our bank account, is $134,913. I will tell you, with the way we're operating right now, we will not be putting another big chunk into reserves. If you remember, part of the problem we had is every year, at the end of the year, we put a big tens of thousands of dollars added to that reserve. With this budget, I'm estimating somewhere maybe between, could be $10,000 that would go into reserves, so quite a bit less than what we have done in the past. In my mind, that's a good thing, because although we're maintaining that $518,230 in reserves, we're not continuing to build it. These programs that we've come up with, the wood stove program and the CCAB program, are basically stopping the bleeding isn't a good example, but we're not continuing to stack money on top of money.
Stopping
on top
the perfusion of
yes,
blood.
Yes, exactly, yeah. So I did want to point that out. The total, of course, is the account balance, $653,143. And then you see our budget that you have before you is roughly $500,000, $499,640. And then you have the revenue sheet and the expense sheet. And I know Director Peters had a question, and you brought it up during the audit. I can bring back more information, because I know the county budget officer and the CAO have looked very, very extensively at the CalPERS liabilities coming in the future. They did look at our budget, and they didn't recommend us including any of that in this year's budget. But there is some sort of impact, as you know, that 18-19 year, I think. I heard somewhere in the neighborhood of 25 or 30%, something like that.
So we have two categories. In Sutter Creek, we have two categories of PERS employees, safety and then miscellaneous, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The increase in 18-19 over current rates, whatever those are,
mm-hmm.
for safety was 23%.
Yeah.
It's an increase over what the current percentage is. And
right.
then for miscellaneous employees, the increase was 14%.
Okay.
It added up to, we only have this many employees.
Yeah.
The increase for fiscal year 18-19 was almost $250,000.
Wow.
Just in the city of Sutter Creek. So what we did, rather than, and our budget is a lot skinnier than the air districts. We don't have a big reserve.
Yeah.
So what we decided to do was set aside, since we can quantify what the hit's going to be in 18-19 within a pretty narrow window, we took half of that and budgeted for it in 17-18.
so that we didn't get hit between the eyes. And
you also
have
can pay it ahead.
18,
did
19.
You know that?
I didn't, but we put it in. We took it out of the budget, put it into a trust fund.
Right.
A trust.
Yes. What about 19?
A reserve fund, basically. Well, we're looking ahead to that, trying to figure out. You know, that will get us a little bit of time, so we're not going to get hit so hard in 18-19.
And soften the blow.
Budgeted by then. Yeah. And then by then, we hope to develop other revenue sources to deal with 19-20. And that's why I asked.
Yeah.
And I are remarkable.
I'm going to revisit that with the county budget officer and just make sure, that we're... Yeah.
We don't have to deal with it today.
But yeah.
Maybe mid-year when we take a look at the budget.
Take a look at it, yeah.
Let's take another look at PERS, and maybe we'll have better information by then.
Sure.
Other questions from the board on the
You don't need a
budget?
County staff or our budget analyst to come in and speak on that issue then, Robin? It'd be easy enough to arrange.
We had, and I don't know who prepared it, but we had information, I think PERS gave it to the city, and that's probably the rub.
Mm-hmm.
PERS probably doesn't deal directly with the air district, only with the county. But
right.
If we applied that 0.04% factor that the auditor laid out for us, maybe we can get close using the county's numbers. But anyway, PERS gave a projection for, I believe, 3 fiscal years out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure they gave the county that, too.
To Director Renato's point, those projections may be junk.
Yeah.
But at least they're better than...
What is the budget, total budget for Sutter Creek? Total dollar?
The general fund's about $1.6 million.
Okay.
All funds, about twice that.
Okay. All right, I was just curious to put it in context, so, yeah.
Okay. Other questions on the budget?
Jim, on the expenses, what is biomass grant, PV money? Not a lot, but I was just curious.
That's the remaining money from the... when the biomass facility was open, there was a... they were sued by the Centers for Biological Diversity, and there was a settlement agreement in place for $25,000 a year for 3 years. We received one payment of $25,000. That $4,395 is what's left over that we haven't expended yet.
We received that payment, the county?
Yeah, the agreement between Centers of Biological Diversity and Buena Vista Biomass, their agreement said $25,000 comes to the air district. That was their agreement.
Jim, are your budget lines under services and supplies, are they realistic? Because I'm comparing them to actual year-to-date 16-17, and most of your increases are 50 to 100% higher or more. Even though they're smaller amounts, it still adds up through the line items.
Mm-hmm.
So are they realistic assumptions as to the amount that we really need?
I believe so, because, you know, looking at it just in terms of the last actual, I've looked at, going back several years, and there is some variability up and down. And so what I tried to do is build in, you know, some cushion, some buffer there, so that we didn't get caught without enough money, so that we were sure to cover it. So I believe so.
Thank you.
Other questions? The $10,000 in contingencies isn't too much.
Yeah, and actually we had zero in there the prior year. So, we did have $10,000, we had zero in the year 2 years ago.
Right.
So we went back to a $10,000 contingency. Now, keep in mind we have the $518,000 in reserve, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Other questions?
I would just on Air Resources board fees. Why is that an expense, and is that something we would actually collect, or we have to pay a fee? Just above biomass, it's 52,815 is the number.
Yeah, that's a line in there, and Air Resource Board fees. I don't see anything in there, so no, I don't. I don't see anything. It's not a fee that we've had to do in the last several years.
Air pollution hearing board fees. So is there an air pollution board that we have?
We are required to have a hearing board, yeah. So so we're required to have a hearing board, but my understanding is it's never been activated.
You know, I guess I should have officially opened this as a public hearing, and I did not technically do that.
Okay.
Close the public hearing.
Thank you.
Second.
Do I have a second? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Any more questions about the budget? Otherwise, I will entertain a motion to approve the proposed 17-18 budget.
So moved.
Second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the 17-18 budget. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Let's go to item 6, APCO's update.
Okay, and the APCO's, I can move through this pretty quickly. First one, smoke reduction bin program, we have talked about that. Our first full month's charges came in right at $10,000, which is exactly what we predicted, so we're right on target. And I've got to give credit to my staff, Romania and Matt, for the way they run and manage the program. It's being managed very well, and so our expenses are exactly where we budgeted and predicted them to be.
And roughly how many stoves was that?
What's that?
How many stoves was that?
No, this is a smoke reduction bin program.
Oh,
this is the bin program. Moving on to wood stove change out. We're on track to start that after the start of the fiscal year. So, and the response has been pretty significant so far. So we're budgeted for 25 change outs, and we already have probably nearly 20 people on our list that are interested in it. So we will be initiating the program with our three local stores here in the county, and as I said, that'll be probably right after the start of the fiscal year, mid-July, I think. So the city-county agency diesel program, we did talk about that a little bit already, and that program was successful, and we do have that remaining $69,000 that we'll be expending as part of that program coming up on this new fiscal year. One thing, you have a copy of a budget transfer request, and that was $17,125, and that was part of the already budgeted money for the city-county agency diesel program, but we had to do a transfer to be able to cover the costs in this last budget year. And then the other thing you have in there is the logo. We have talked about the logos, not formally as an agenda item, but I just wanted to show you a comparison of our existing logo up top and a kind of a suggested logo update or a refresh. I want to give Herminia credit for coming up with this. She was able to develop this herself, and I like it a lot. I don't know what the board of directors thinks of it, but
I like it.
I said better than the old one.
Better than the old one. If I can either bring it back as an official agenda item, or we can just move to the new one.
You need a board approval for that.
Well, we can't act on it formally today because it's not agendized, but if you'd like, I'll bring it back as an agenda item.
I guess the
other option is if it's managed, the air pollution control officer's prerogative to move to a logo. I don't know if you want to do that.
I like it, but you need to make sure Amador is centered up on top. It's not quite centered.
I wonder about that.
Okay. Yeah.
Makes me lean my head.
And actually, I think we are going to have a graphic professional. There's a local fellow here who, for really cheap, he could take this into a very professionalized format, I think for a couple hundred bucks. And we would have then our new logo in the whatever the GIF or JPEG, whatever the format is. Show me.
It was just done in Word. So nothing, no fancy graphic design software. The guy, he's local. That's what he does. He does graphic design, so he could do all the JPEGs and media website formats for us.
So. Well, I'm okay with us giving the director just the authority to go ahead, since we all seem to like it.
Yeah.
You guys okay with that? Okay.
Okay. Sounds like there's consensus.
I do have one question. Do you guys have any shirts or jackets that use this logo?
We don't have any of that fun stuff.
What?
Darn it!
That reserve. No, I'm kidding.
No swag.
No swag. And then the last thing is the financials through June 15th, 2017. Those are all included, and that's the QuickBooks software that Herminia uses. And she's spent a lot of work in the last year kind of coming up to speed and really learning how to utilize this program. And so you can take a look at that. The final thing is a correspondence letter from a woman named Maggie Hamilton, and she wrote a very nice letter. She had note stopped by to see Herminia, and she said some nice things about Herminia in her note.
That's very nice. Okay. That concludes our meeting. Our next meeting is August 17th.
I have the 15th. Is it the
15th? Oh, 15th.
Okay.
I was looking at 2017, sorry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Meeting adjourned.
Well run.